Radio Free Palmer, 89.5 KVRF, presents Mushing Radio, hosted by Robert Porto. Mushing Radio is about dog-powered sports, living in the Great White North, and mushing. Visit our website at mushingradio.com. Here is your host, Robert Porto.
Hello and welcome, everybody. This is Robert Forto, and you are listening to Mushing Radio on KVRF FM in Palmer, Alaska, and streaming live on RadioFreePalmer.org, and follow us anytime on MushingRadio.com. Be sure to check out our Facebook page at DogWorks Radio and follow us on Twitter as well. Tonight, we're continuing our Iditarod Musher series with Musher Kelly Griffin calling in from Kinnick, Alaska, and her kennel, Silver Bell Kennels, and the website is silverbellkennels.com. We had a little bit of technical difficulty at the intro here, so we're going to pick it up about 30 seconds in. Here we go.
I was born in Minnesota, but I don't know anything about Minnesota because I've been living in Alaska since I was four. Pretty much lived in South Central Alaska all my life. Been running dogs since I was about a teenager and started with a team from the dog pound. When I graduated from high school, I stopped by the dog pound on my way out of Anchorage and got my first team.
You know, that's how a lot of us start that way. We start with a bunch of pound puppies and pretty much, run the races as we see fit. We're obviously not looking to do too good with the rescues, I guess, at the very beginning. But, man, a lot of folks have really started out that way, haven't they?
Yeah, this was not a race team, and not a single dog nor myself had a clue. So it took probably a good 10 years before I got even half of an idea of how to take care of the dogs right, run them right, do anything. I don't recommend doing it the way I did it.
Well, you know, you must be doing something right, because now you're running in the Iditarod and the Yukon Quest, and you're hosting our guest that was on last week, Jamaican musher Newton Marshall. So I think that you're becoming pretty respectable in the mushing circles. What do you think?
Yeah, I'll go with that.
Well, again, thanks for joining us here on the show. It's in the height of summer here. Tell us a little bit about your kennel. How many dogs do you have at your place? What's the setup there?
Well, we've actually got Silver Bell Kennels is pretty small. I think 19 race dogs, 6 retirees, and 10 pups. And we've partnered up with Kathleen Fredericks' kennel. She's got about the same size of kennel as we do, so it doubles us up and gives both of us a lot more depth doing it that way, and keeps our expenses a lot lower.
Right. And Newton mentioned last week on the show that he was going to be running the puppy team, the younger dogs. Is that most of Kathleen's dogs, or is that kind of yours and hers mixed in together?
It'll be hers and ours mixed in together.
Okay.
Yeah, we're throwing all the dogs in one big melting pot and building the teams out of that.
You know, that sounds great. And I know he had mentioned that you guys were planning on running the first race of the year, the Sheep Mountain 150, is in early December. Are you running in that race as well?
Probably not. I don't think we're going to have enough dogs to do more than two teams. And all this is also contingent on funding, but that would be Newton and Ed Gruby, my partner.
Okay.
Are on the ticket to run that race. I ran it last year and I had an absolute blast. It's a wonderful, it's a great race.
Can you tell us a little bit about that? We spoke about a lot of races here on the show, you know, the big boys, the Copper Basin and the Yukon Quest and the Kinnick 200 and things like that. But the 150, the Sheep Mountain 150, the steers put that on up there, not too far from the Mattsu. I guess it's still in the Mattsu Valley. What is that race like for being such an early race in the year? How are snow conditions? What's the weather like up that way?
The snow conditions can either be really good or bad enough to cancel the race. It's third week of December, and the race is 3 50-mile legs with 5-hour mandatory breaks in between. It'll loop out, it'll leave Sheep Mountain Lodge and loop around and end up at Eureka Lodge for a 5-hour layover, and then it'll leave there and loop around out past Eureka pan in the mountains there and come back to Eureka for the next 5 hour and then go back 50 miles back to Sheep Mountain.
Wow. Right. Right. Is it a pretty competitive race? I know names like Mackey and King and even Berkowitz and those guys have run that race a few times. What draws out the big boys to something like that?
Well, it is very competitive, and it's also a good shakedown to see how to show some younger dogs other dog teams.
Right.
And a race where, you know, you're not bleeding through the ears and nose about winning it. It's just a really nice race.
Right. So are you planning on running anything else besides the Iditarod and the Yukon Quest? I know funding is always an issue to just about every musher. We're out there, you know, busting our hind ends in the summertime to make enough money to do it in the winter. Are there other mid-distance races maybe that you're doing or your kennel as? I'm speaking to you as, I guess, the spokesperson for the kennel, since you do have a whole bunch of folks doing the same thing there. So are you guys doing anything else as well?
Yeah, it looks like Ed and I are lined up for the Kobuk. And let's see, Kathleen is the Kinnick 200, and Ed would be the Kinnick 200. And not knowing what the Copper Basin is going to do this year, and I haven't heard anything about the Paul Johnson yet either.
Right, and that's pretty much a brand new race. The inaugural run was last year. That I hear that's a tough one, a 450 miler over there on the western side of Alaska. Did you guys partake in that one last year?
No, we didn't. But I watched it very closely, and it looks like it's a fantastic race to show a young team the end of the Iditarod Trail.
Right, right. Well, let's jump right into that Iditarod. Congratulations on your finish last year, 27th place. Very respectable. Tell us about the race itself. What is bringing back the memories here 5 months later?
Oh, of last year's race?
Yes.
Oh, the big, huge mistake I made at Shaktulik. But
tell us about that.
Well, it was windy, and my dogs were quartering into it pretty good getting to Shaq, and then a lot of mushers were holed up there, and it was like, should I stay or should I go? And some people made a break for it and actually made it through okay, and now I'm looking back, you know. At the time, I really didn't want to go because it was pretty senseless, you know, to do something like that for only a dog race. And now I'm looking back, well, wasn't that bad?
Right, right. You know, a lot of folks have some real issues there at that checkpoint. Why is that one that people really struggle with? Tell us, you know, for the new listeners, people that don't follow Iditarod as closely, what is up with that checkpoint there at Shaktulik?
Well, Shaktulik is out on a spit, several miles out on this long, skinny spit, and you could spit across this spit. It is very narrow. It goes out a long ways, and then it's between the ocean and I believe it's a lake, but it's windy. It's really windy there. And then what you're doing when you leave Shaktulik going up the Koyuk, about 10, 12 miles, you're kind of on land, but you don't feel like you're on land. And then you drop onto the ice. And this is Norton Sound. And on a good day, it's white on white on white on white. You can't see the horizon on either side. If the markers aren't there, it's almost a vertigo feeling. You don't know where you're at, and you don't know which way you're heading. And if you start to head off towards the left, you might find yourself into some open leads or something. So it freaks a lot of people out, and it is pretty scary, and you should be on the ball when you go across there. So now the wind's screaming across there, blowing a lot of snow, you can't see anything. And then the dogs might go, well, this sucks, and just quit.
Right.
A lot of considerations there.
What place were you in, if you can recall, when you left Shaktulik? Do you know?
No, I don't even know.
Well, let me just put it this way. If you're in the middle of the pack at that point of the race, finishing 27th, not knowing exactly where you are, but just for argument's sake, at middle of the pack, how does the race change from that point on in terms of trail conditions, in terms of, you know, that support network, you know, the media and everything is following all the guys up in the front? How is it there in the middle of the pack from that point forward?
Oh, it's fine. You can't tell anything. The trail is usually pretty good. you've got a lot of people around you. You kind of have mini races in there. You know, you've been running with the same crowd for the last couple hundred miles, and you're getting a little closer to them going, well, you know, if nothing else, I'd sure like to beat so-and-so.
Right.
You know? The volunteers are still fresh and lively. I don't think it's much different than the front of the pack, except for there is no media. None.
How about towards the back of the pack then? Have you ever been in that position where you're pulling up the rear, so to speak? And if you have been, how does that come into play, those same type of scenarios with the media and the trail and the volunteers and that sort of thing, several days out from even the middle of the pack guys?
I've never been there.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
I've heard the stories, you know, of how the trail just really deteriorates after a certain number of days, you know, where all the guys have moved on and they're ready to wrap it up, so to speak.
Yeah, places that the trail can deteriorate, and it can happen to anybody in the race. The Yukon River, a little blow can come up there, but it's probably the most notorious places for the trail to go to crap is at the beginning of the race. From Squetna to, say, Rainy Pass,
right.
That section in there, because the snow is so deep that once you use up the little bit of base you have on the trail, there's nothing. You can go 10 feet down and look in the bottoms of the alders underneath the snow.
Wow.
So it's a pretty fragile trail because it's not, you know, used a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And the more traffic it gets, the more it gets pounded out, and then pretty soon you get big trenches. And I've been in that, and that's no fun.
Kelly Griffin is our guest. She is an Iditarod musher living in the Wasilla area out on KGB Road, otherwise known as Reddingtonville out that way. You're living in a lot of history out there in that area. How is it to have that famous name right down the road from you?
It's really nice. The Reddingtons are a great family. They do a lot for the area. Several years ago, or just a couple years ago, actually, we fought for it for several years. This whole area, we got zoned into the Kinnick Sled Dog and Recreation District, where dog mushing is a protected use.
Wow.
As well as any kind of agriculture or any obnoxious thing you want to think of to do, it's a protected use.
Well, that's interesting. I haven't heard that before. Does that mean if you have incorrigible neighbors that they have to go by the wayside?
Oh, if you've had your dog team here and there's no covenants against it and neighbors move in, they don't have a leg to stand on if they are complaining about you.
You know, we
as long
have,
as you're following the leash laws, you know, your dogs are contained and such.
We have that issue up in Willow a little bit, you know, where we have some feisty neighbors, so to speak, and, you know, they're trying to push their weight around. So that's good to know, because I know a lot of folks do want to live down in that area, you know, coming to Alaska with their dog teams and whatnot. They're looking for that place to be, and I don't know what land and things like that are like down there, but obviously it's a welcome place down there in your neck of the woods.
Yeah, and the next problem is fighting for our trails, because this area is also the fastest growing area and the fastest growing area of the state.
Right.
So. We end up every year kind of challenged with some trail issues.
Right, and of course that trail has, we talked about the Reddingtons, that trail there that you're speaking of has a heck of a lot of history on it, doesn't it?
That's not that one is not in too much dire circumstances, but all the trails that we use to train on.
Okay.
You know, for instance, it takes me 8 miles to get to the Iditarod Trail from where I am.
Okay.
And other people's just access, and it's a huge recreation, snow machine recreation area out here, too. But a lot of our trails are more or less trespassed because they haven't been blessed yet by the borough.
Right, right. You know, my next question for you, Kelly, is you mentioned that you've lived in Alaska since you were 4 years old. Is that correct?
Yes.
And been mushing since you're a teenager. Tell us about how things have changed over your lifetime in terms of the sport of mushing. Has it gotten better for folks? Is it, obviously it's much more competitive and much more corporate than it was even, you know, 10, 15 years ago. How have you seen it changed for better or for worse?
Oh, it's just gotten more and more expensive. Holy smokes. You know, you used to be able to get really quality, well, actually the dog food's gotten better too, but you could get the best quality dog food for in the 20s, $20, and now you're looking over 50.
Yeah.
It's just gotten horrendously expensive. And then if you're in the racing business, the purses haven't risen accordingly. And so we're actually making less. I'm assuming that you actually place and get some money. You're making less money.
Are you one of the folks that considers yourself a professional musher in terms of going after it for making a living, or do you do something in the summer months, you know, like Ramey Smith is a logger and, you know, people run tours and that sort of thing? What do you guys do at your place?
I consider myself a professional musher, but that's not my income. I've got a little farm here. We raise chickens and they lay eggs, and we sell the eggs.
Wow. Some Alaskan grown eggs. A lot of people here in Alaska run around with those Alaskan grown shirts. So I'm sure that you're a big proponent of that.
Absolutely. I think the state could be absolutely self-sufficient in everything we could ever need. And when I was young, transportation of groceries to the state wasn't as good as it is these days. And we were more aware of just how on the knife edge we were in Alaska for anything happening for our transportation system. And a lot of people have forgotten that, I think, and because transportation has gotten so reliable.
Right. But for one that depends on that Alaskan-grown mentality, you're a big proponent of everything that we can possibly do here in Alaska. You're all for it, aren't you?
Oh, absolutely.
So my next question, Kelly Griffin is our guest. I did Rod Musher. Again, pardon my ignorance here. How many times have you done the Yukon Quest?
Eight times.
Okay, I apologize for not doing enough homework there. So we have to say, Iditarod and Yukon Quest veteran. Let's roll into that if we can. What is your big compare and contrast between those two? We had on Brent Sass a couple of weeks ago, the Rookie of the Year in Iditarod, and has done quite a few quests, and of course he talked about the differences between, you know, just how fun the Yukon Quest is and how, you know, demanding the Iditarod is. What is your compare and contrast between the two?
Well, my biggest one is the Yukon Quest is more physical and the Iditarod is more mental. And I'm a kind of person that will dig a ditch all day and be happy, but if I have to think too hard, I can do it, but it wears me out.
Right.
Then beyond that, the Yukon Quest is a month earlier, and it starts more interior, and it's darker, a whole lot darker. Iditarod is about 12 hours light, 12 hours dark. Quest will be maybe 7 hours light, and the rest is dark.
Right. And that's a big difference, isn't it?
Oh, it's a huge difference, and it gets cold. On Iditarod, too, it has a challenge with the light because you find yourself racing the sun sometimes.
Right. Hey, can you tell the new folks that are listening, what does that mean? A lot of folks think, yeah, we're out mushing all day long, you know, in the bright sun, you know, feeling the sun beat down on our face and things like that. But it's actually the opposite, isn't it?
Yeah, it's the opposite. These dogs don't do well when it's warm out. They overheat very easily when it's warm. And I'm talking maybe 10, 15 degrees above zero and above that. Probably the optimum temperature is 10 degrees above to 10 below. That's nice for the people, nice for the dogs. So we do a lot of running at night. And we can do that these days because of the fantastic advances in headlamps.
Right, exactly.
So we do a lot of running at night. The dogs love to run at night. And we rest during the heat of the day. I like to do that during the heat of the day so the dogs get better rest. You know, they're not trying to stay warm and rest. They're a little bit warm and resting.
Right. So let's talk a little bit about your dogs. Do you breed your own? Do you have a prevailing line in your dogs? What is the makeup of what you have there in the kennel?
Well, let me take a look out here. We have a litter about every other year. We tend to keep our dog for a long time and keep a small kennel, so we don't breed a lot of big litters. Or breed often and have a lot of litters.
Right.
So we just kind of replenish our own thing here. I originally got dogs out of Salcha, so they're originally open class sprint, are the bloodlines.
Right.
And so my guys are about 50 pounds average, and they're Alaska Husky.
Tell us about the progression in the dogs that you've seen in your mushing career. You know, they had, the husky-looking dogs for a period of time. Then all of a sudden, the Europeans came over and brought their style, the Euro hound-type style. Then, of course, the more houndy-type dogs. And then we're going back a little bit towards that husky-looking dog now. What do you think about that change over your career?
I think the distance dogs have always been predominantly husky. I don't think there's been a lot of the hound influence in distance. But it definitely in the sprint, it's the pendulum swings back and forth. But I think the hound is always going to stay in sprint.
Right, right. And there's a huge difference between the Alaskan husky with very little hound in it, and then those Euro hound, they look like pointers running down the trail out there on the sprint trails.
Oh, they are.
Right. Yeah, I assume they could do well in something like Iditarod or Quest or something with the appropriate training, but those guys just look like they would freeze to death out there.
Yeah, they would be a whole lot higher maintenance because of their hair coat.
Right.
Isn't suitable for, I'm talking the houndy hounds.
Right,
and
exactly.
I don't know about if they're different in recovery or not. I used to have a Weimaraner for years, and he ran with the team. And then after the run, he'd come in on the couch and sleep the rest of the day. And the Huskies would maybe take a nap and be up and spinning, in an hour or two. And so his recovery was a whole lot different than the Huskies were. And I don't have that as much experience with the houndy dogs to be able to say if that's true about them or not. But
so if we can go, I know you're partnered up with Newton Marshall, the Jamaican musher, and he told us about the story about how you guys met. I assume this summer sometime you headed down to Jamaica for vacation, and you guys hooked up and pretty much brought him on board, and now he's mushing with you. Can you add some to that story a little bit for us?
Well, I actually first met him in 2009 during the Yukon Quest, when he was running the Yukon Quest. I took the year off from racing, and I was a judge on that race. And just kind of followed him along the race, and I was really impressed with him. Pretty much everybody thought that it was just a big publicity stunt. He'd probably go out and flame out, first two checkpoints or something like that. But I started watching him. And he really was a dog musher and was doing a really good job, and it was a for real thing. And I'm just really impressed at how he kept his spirits up. He's always smiling, always happy, always had a cheerful word for somebody, no matter how down he was.
Right.
So, and then just looking at the kid as a Jamaican, through and through, he had never really been out of his country, and then they toss him up into the Yukon in the middle of winter to learn how to run dogs. So he took that all in stride and did a good job at it. So, yeah, I looked him up when we were down there just to say hi. And he says, yeah, I haven't ever been to Alaska in the summer. And so there she goes.
So do you think he's going to be prepared, ready to go now that he's working with you guys? I don't think that you're taking him under his wing. He's a true veteran, having finished both the Iditarod and the Quest. So he knows what he's doing out there. But do you think he's prepared now? He's taken a year or two off?
You're always learning. Everybody's
right.
Learning. I learn something every day. He's going to learn something every day. So it's just, even though you finish these races, there's always a lot of room to gain a lot more experience. So that's what we're going to do while we're training our dogs.
There you go. And like you said, it's never too short to learn. You can always learn something out there. And I've been doing this for a long time, took a long break, and I'm still learning out there every day the techniques that folks are willing to share. If you can, tell me a little bit about that. Some people are very closed-mouthed when it comes to sharing their methods, their techniques and things. Are you one of those folks that likes to share the wealth, so to speak, in terms of knowledge?
Oh, yeah. I'll pass my BS along to anybody that wants to listen.
There you go. So Kelly Griffin is our guest tonight on Mushing Radio. And again, I want to make sure that folks know about our brand new app for the iPhone. Make sure you check it out on the App Store for iPhone. I'm not sure if it's on Android or not. It is, but the producer just said it is. Kelly, we always ask this question to everybody that is on our show. What is one piece of advice you can tell to those novice guys, whether it be the recreational musher with a couple of dogs in the backyard or the guy that's, you know, packing up the U-Haul and moving up to Alaska thinking about the Iditarod in a couple of years? What can you tell those folks?
Well, first I'd ask why.
Good point.
They better have a big bank account if they want to race.
Right.
A recreational musher, just have fun. Actually, anybody, just have fun with these dogs. They're amazing what they can do. And don't underestimate what they can do.
Right, right. And what about that guy with the U-Haul? Can you give him a piece of advice other than the bank account?
Yeah, if you're going to settle in an area, make sure it's going to be dog-friendly and you have good access to the trails. There's plenty of places that are available that are on the trail system, so the worst thing is to come all this way and then have to truck your dogs every day to go run them.
Yeah, yeah. Coming from Colorado where we had to do it, you know, 3 hours up, 3 hours back for an hour or two run, it just sucks. And I'm so glad to be on that trail system, and that is a huge part of this whole mushing mentality, is to be able to, you know, to wake up and just jump out the back door. That's a huge plus, I guess, and thank you for sharing that. Kelly, a couple minutes left. Anything else you want to mention? Any sponsor you want to say, you know, give a heads up to, anything like that?
Oh, a big shout-out to Spike and his Alaskan RV tours. If it wasn't for him, we wouldn't be entering anything this year.
Very cool. Anything else?
No, can't think of anything right now.
All right, well, SilverBellKennels.com, Silver Bell with an E there on the bell. SilverBellKennels.com is the place. I know you have a Facebook page as well. How else can folks get in contact with you? Do you, do you accept phone calls? How did folks get in touch with you guys there with Shameless Huskies, Newton Marshall, and Kelly Griffin?
It's all on the website under the contact page for contacting me. And then anytime you see a highlight on a name like Shameless Huskies, just click on that and it'll click through over to Kathleen's website. And if you want to contact Newton, it's through the Silver Bell, but he does have his own website too. It's more of an informational thing about him.
You know, I'm looking on your website right now. I think it's pretty cool, some of the gear that you have for sale, especially some of those old Yukon Quest posters, you know, from 2004, 2005. That's pretty neat. You don't usually see that for a sale on people's sites. Do you have anything else unique that you're offering in the coming future? I know Newton's book is brand new and you have it for sale on his site. Do you foresee anything else coming out where people can help you out?
Oh, we've got the Doggone Addiction DVD. A lot of people enjoy that. Just your regular booties from the trail. We even got it for Checkpoint sponsors. We even got it. I'll send you a grungy old bag right out of Unicleat.
There you go.
Just kind of a fun thing to...
Very cool. Well, Kelly, it's been a pleasure. We're just about out of time. I'll make sure I send over some links and things once we get it all fixed up for you. And you're welcome to share that on your website, on Facebook, whatever you like, okay?
Okay. Well, thank you very much for having me.
Thank you very much. And it's good talking with you. And we'll talk again soon, okay?
Okay. Bye-bye.
Goodbye. That was Kelly Griffin, our guest on Mushing Radio. Make sure you check us out on Saturday afternoon, 1 o'clock. We're going to be at the Alaska State Fair. Yukon Quest Champion, 2012 Yukon Quest Champion. Champion Hugh Neff is going to be co-hosting with me from the fair, so we're looking forward to that. And until then, we'll see you guys next time. Goodbye.